Okay, so as I said, today will be a shorter class, so you'll get a little bit of a break. Okay, so today's class, I hope, is an interesting one. And it's basically, does parental opinion within Jewish law matter?
Say it again, those.
Does parental opinion, does the opinion of your parents in Judaism, in Jewish law specifically, matter in choosing a marriage partner and a mate, right? So it's an interesting question, right? On the one hand, we have to honor and fear our parents, and we'll define what that is in a second. It includes standing up for them, bringing them a drink if they ask for it, not contradicting them, not sitting in their seat, right? That's the ideal. Obviously, it's some kids are better at this and other kids need more time with this, unfortunately. But the ideal is to honor and fear our parents, right? That's one of the Ten Commandments. Kabeda sevicha v'atimecha, to honor your mother and father. And then a different place it says to fear your mother and father. And so the idea is that you have to honor them and fear them. Now, this is especially true when you're younger, when you're 5 years old, 7 years old, even, 12 years old. Most kids listen to their parents and they honor their parents because they're kids and their parents, they know that their parents do everything for them. So that's that should be ideally a nice age when this happens, when children are doing these things and respecting their parents. But when kids get older a little bit, it gets a little bit harder because the kids are becoming a little bit more independent, right? They're 18, they're already in high school, then they're going off to college, and so they are not around as much, and they start, charting their own course. So it's the idea is, how do we balance independence with honoring the wishes of the parents? Now, what I just said, we have to revisit, because honor and fear, we talk about doing things for one's parents. Like we said, you have to stand up for them, show them honor, and then also fear them, not to contradict them. There's even an idea of not, when they're in a conversation with someone else, let's say your father's talking to someone else, you're not even necessarily supposed to agree with your father in the conversation, because then that shows that your father needs your approval, right? That, oh, yeah, dad's right. So, okay, so that one's a little bit tricky because, you're not consciously trying to disrespect, but even to that level, right? But there are some exceptions, right? And listening to one's parents may not be under that rubric, as weird as that sounds. Meaning, honoring and fearing them doesn't necessarily mean you have to listen to everything that they tell you to do.
You mean to obey it. You don't mean to listen.
Okay, good. So you're saying, okay, you can't say like, oh, I don't want to hear your advice or whatever. That's disrespectful. But you can take their advice. Right, exactly. What I'm saying is, you don't always have to go with it. Oh, you should buy that car, not that car. Or you need to go to that college, you can't go to this college, right? So those are things to take into account and to listen respectfully. But ultimately, the idea is that at a certain point, independent choice comes into it. And Judaism doesn't necessarily have like age 18, age 21 for things like an American law. It's less clear than that. So even a 15-year-old kid, certain things, he doesn't necessarily have to listen. Now, it's tricky because if you're not going to listen, so when does it become like disrespectful, and when is it just the personal choice of the student, of the kid. It's a gray line, I believe. You can come up with certain scenarios when, you know, the parents want the kid to listen because they think it's best for the kid, but the kid thinks that for them it's fine if they do whatever it is. So it gets to a gray line. Also, on a simple level, you don't necessarily have to spend money on your parents. Honoring them doesn't necessarily mean, you know, every birthday buying them, you know, $1,000, you know, piece of jewelry. It's not, you know, and you know, even if your parents like need something, you should help them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to spend money for that. So let's say your parents, I don't know, just a silly example, have a leaky roof, right? And the repairs will cost $500. So while you should try...
A lot more than that.
Okay, I'm not a homeowner. I'm an apartment renter. So I'll take your word. Yeah, so whatever it costs, you should say, Mom and Dad, like, you know, I want to... Especially if they need the help. Obviously, if they're independent, great. If they need the help, you could say, you know, let me try to, you know, call some people and see the best deal. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have to shell out the money. You know, it's honor is different than, you know, spending money for, you know, they should have their own money. So that's one thing. And we'll see how that comes into play in a little bit. Number two, you know, we know the famous example that you don't listen to your parents when they tell you to violate a commandment, right? So, you know, oh, this year, you know, I know you usually, you know, take a lulav and an etrog. This year, don't take it, right? Or even worse, we have some rich neighbors. They're on vacation in Florida. You know our situation. We have a leaky roof. I want you, son. Trust me. We have a key to the back door. We know where some of the money is. They've, you know, we've helped them in the past. We've done them some favors, you know. This is where Mr. Cohn keeps some money. We'll pay him back. Stealing, you can't do that. Oh, but your father told you to. You have to honor your parents. Not when it comes to violating a commandment, right? So, and that might even extend to... not necessarily a commandment, but a gray moral kind of thing, where you don't necessarily feel comfortable with it. So also you can say, I'm gonna, Mom, I respect your opinion, but I don't think that's right. You know, in my heart, I don't agree with that. I respect your opinion, but I'm not sure I'm gonna do it. So that could also fall into that category. So again, there's honoring one's parents and fearing them, but then there's also exceptions in practical life, right? So in the realm of personal choices like getting married, especially when the child is older, how much does the child have to listen to the parents? What's considered honoring them by listening to them, and what is considered from the parents' perspective too meddlesome, right? Meddling a little too much, right? Would it be a sin for the child to disobey and to elope with someone that they find, and they think that for them, this person is of marriageable quality, and the parent says, "No, I don't think so. Not a good girl is. It's not a good shidduch. We've heard things. We don't think the girl is this or that. She's not right for you. We think that you should avoid this." And the boy says, "Mom, Dad, I'm 24.
I love her.
I'm 27. I'm 30. I love her. Like, this is, I'm sorry. We're going to get married." So what does Jewish law have to say about that? Is it, would it be disrespectful to...
Rabbi Akiva's wife disobeyed her father to marry Rabbi Akiva.
Aha, that's a great example, right? So let me just sum up for everyone. So, right, so Rabbi Akiva was this, he found himself at 40 years old as a shepherd. He hated scholars because he thought that they were haughty, and perhaps it could have been a little bit of envy because he himself couldn't even read the alphabet, the ABC, you know, the Hebrew alphabet. And so at a certain point, he hated, like, the scholars and everything. But his wife, who saw him as, like, a trustworthy person, Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, who was this rich man, right, one of the richest men around, right? So he did not want her to marry him because he's just a shepherd. He's this ignorant shepherd.
Unlearned.
Right, unlearned. He doesn't know anything. You should marry a scholar. And she says, no, I want to marry him. He's a good person, right?
I could see.
Right. So he said, if you marry her, you will lose any connection to me. I'm not going to support you, right, if you marry him. And so, like you said, she disobeys and they get married. And the stories about how they lived in, like, such poverty, on straw. And but she didn't care. And eventually he became one of the greatest scholars, right? He started at age 40, which is, of course, a prime lesson for us, that it's never too late to start learning. Fine, very good. That's a great example. I didn't think about that before. So, right, so why don't you say Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva? She didn't show kibbutz of aim to her father. She didn't listen to him. So you see from there that maybe... That didn't even come up. That's spot on. Very good. So you see a clear proof from that because no one the Gemara doesn't say, oh well, she disrespected her father. The Talmud doesn't get into that. So it was her choice. Very good. Excellent. But the question could be strengthened though. Because what if Rabbi Akiva wasn't just ignorant shepherd, but what if he was somewhat of not a thief outright, but he was maybe...
Tricky person.
Maybe he didn't treat the sheep the best all the time, but she was still attracted to him. So in that case, not only is he, you know, not a scholar, but he's like a little bit... He has more things he needs to work on. So then what would you say in that case if she still married him? Because then you would say, well, the father had, he was right. And he had more of a reason than in the actual story. So that's kind of, that also gets into the question here. Okay. Now, most of the time, God willing, even nowadays, parents and children, either immediately or worst case scenario, eventually agree on the marriage mate. It won't be applicable. So we don't have to worry about this all that often. Usually, you know, boys and girls, they make, you know, the right choices that their parents would agree to. They take someone that's like them from the same kind of family. But sometimes, once in a while, you know, these other kinds of situations can get very dicey, right? Okay, so that's our question. A young man's dating a young woman. The parents disapprove, tell him not to. Does he have to listen, right? So usually you should listen, as we've said. However, we said before, remember that you... don't need to listen to your parents if they tell you to violate one of the commandments. One of the commandments is to be fruitful and multiply, which requires getting married. So maybe the idea is that he doesn't have to listen to his parents strictly for the reason that it's his commandment to get married. And so they're telling him not to. Now, they're not telling him not to get married at all. They just want him to find someone else. And yet... maybe he doesn't feel like he'll ever find love again. This is his chance to do the mitzvah of getting married and having kids. So maybe for him, he doesn't have to listen strictly based on that reason. Okay? Okay, so now some sources. So the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch, he says that a son does not have to listen to the parents' protest regarding a potential mate, regarding a potential wife. It is not included in kibbutz of aim. It's not included in the idea of honoring and respecting one's fearing one's parents. So he says, very matter-of-factly, without a lot of, and this, it's a little ambiguous, because he doesn't kind of say what the situation is. He just says, plainly, a son does not have to listen to their parents about whom to marry. So it seems pretty clear-cut from his angle that, you know, the son can do what he'd like. It doesn't say that the parents have to agree to it, have to like it, have to even come to the wedding. You know, unfortunately, that kind of thing happens. We don't want that, but it ultimately, he says, it's the son's choice. Right? He has a lot of leeway, it sounds like.
Rabbi?
Yes. Okay.
And who don't want to get married.
Right.
Who don't want to be fruitful.
Could you repeat after he did?
Yeah.
And what does this have to say about that kind of a situation?
Okay, so not our topic for today necessarily. He brought up men that are homosexual. Right? That's what you brought up. And so if the parents say, you know, marry a good Jewish girl, and the kid, either he tells the parents, they know about it, or they don't know about it, he's, no, Ma, I don't want to get married, and they keep saying, no, you have to get married. So I think what your question is, correct me if I'm wrong, is that what should the kid do? Is he required to listen and get married? Even though he is not interested in meeting women. Is that your question? Yeah, so I don't think it's not really up for discussion whether the parents can force the child to marry anyone. I mean, you can't, you know, if it's an adult, you know, you can't force anyone to get married. It's a mitzvah to get married and have children, but we know that, unfortunately, or by their decision, that not everyone does get married.
It's not their decision. God programmed their brain that way.
No. I'm talking in general. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying in general we know that there are people that remain single, whether they choose to remain single or not. That's all I'm referring to. Meaning some people don't ever want to get married. And then other people would like to, but unfortunately never meet the right person. So, which can be for another topic about Bashert and how that all works with free choice of... Okay, but be that as it may, so not everyone gets married, even if they're heterosexual. So, I don't think that you can force the kid to get married. It's not going to work. So I don't know.
Is there anything in the writings that addresses this issue?
Well, what's your angle? Are you saying that maybe the kid should be forced to get married to a woman?
No, I'm just wondering if anywhere in the writings there is recognition that there are people like that.
Oh, in general. Not specific to this issue. You're saying in general, what do they talk about? You know, gay people and marriage and that kind of idea. I don't really want to get into it here, because listen, I mean, there's verses that say certain things about it, not the people themselves, but the act, which you can't deny. It's in the Torah. That it's not really allowed. The act is not really allowed. Now, obviously, we respect, you know, everyone. We're obligated to show love and care for everyone. So, but I'm not really. You're not going to find an advocating that the two men should get married. I don't think you're going to find that. In the classical sources, But as I said, I didn't really want to get into that topic. We can talk more privately, but I appreciate your question. Okay, so the other 2 points just on this is that it sounds like it's obvious that the parents can't disapprove based on the girl's parents, meaning if there's an issue with the in-laws, which that does happen, right? Once the parents of one and the parents of the other. So it sounds like that's not, well, we'll see, but at least from this source, it doesn't sound like that's even a question. It's that he can marry the girl, meaning, of course, if the protest is even on the girl herself, he can marry her. So certainly if the protest is on the other set, so that, again, the child should listen to those concerns of the parents, but he doesn't, ultimately, it's still up to him. So, and then perhaps this is the normative Ashkenazic approach, but it's not necessarily the consensus, meaning we'll see that others have some other approaches to this issue. So, for example, Rabbi Avadia Yosef, he was a great Sephardic scholar in Israel, so he says as follows. He says there's a difference. He says, if the parents of the man, of the boy, say that the girl or her family is unacceptable for substantive reasons, whether they be psychological, social, religious,
whatever.
So, and the marriage would cause them embarrassment and shame in their community. So then he says one must obey the parents and not marry the girl. For example, if the parents disapprove of certain negative qualities they see in the girl or her family, again, you know, you could conjure up what that might be. Or if the family or the girl's religious standards are not to their liking, they're lacking, and then they would suffer embarrassment as well, as a result of the marriage, the boy should obey the parents' wishes. He quotes a verse, he quotes a pasuk in Devarim that says, cursed is one who humiliates his father or mother, which is a prohibition against causing one's parents embarrassment. So therefore, if the parents are legitimately concerned that the marriage would bring them and their family shame due to negative qualities of the girl or her family, the boy should not marry her, right? The boy should not marry her. And actually, the person he's quoting, the earlier authority, is actually an Ashkenazic authority. So again, as I said, it's not so clear-cut, even in the Ashkenazic rabbis. So there is a dissenting opinion that disagrees. So according to this, there's a difference. Because if the girl he's dating is proper and modest and upstanding, she comes from a generally good family, but the parents disapprove of the match due to personal or otherwise insignificant factors, such as money or that they're not scholarly, like the boy's family, they're low.
The
lower esteem, right? So esteem in the community, etc. Or they think the girl is, you know, taller than the guy, or, you know, she's too short, or she's not pretty enough, whatever. So then the young man should. He says the young man should consult with a rabbi for guidance. And it very well be that he can marry the girl and ignore his parents' consternations or protests, right? So this logic behind this position appears in an earlier rabbi's responsa. So he says as follows. There is a case of a young man who wanted to marry a certain young woman. The young man's father intervened and did not wish his son to marry the girl. So the question is, does he have to listen or not? So The answer is that the son does not have to listen. He compared this to a situation where a father asks a son to violate a command in the Torah, like we mentioned before. If the son is commanded in this instance to listen to the father, he will have to marry some other girl whom he perhaps, you can always find love again, but perhaps you won't love as much as the first girl that he was not able to marry. Think of perhaps Romeo and Juliet kind of idea. So then he will not have as much peace in the home because the new girl might be very attractive to the parents, to his parents. Great girl, Shana Madela, right? Wonderful match, wonderful shidduch. But deep down, he wanted the first girl, right? So it'll never be the same. And he quotes a verse in Shir HaShirim in the Song of Songs, who says that large amounts of water cannot quash the love that exists between two people in love, right? Which is very poetic and talks about the power of love, right? So, so the scholar concludes by saying that lifnim mishurat hadin, which means above and beyond the letter of the law, right? Meaning, if he really wants to, you know, go above and beyond, perhaps the son should reconsider the will of the parents. Maybe they're right. Maybe I should rethink this. Maybe I should get more advice. Maybe she's not right for me. Maybe I'll regret this in a year or 5 years. Okay. So then he should try to, he says, put out the fire in his heart, meaning try to think with his mind as opposed to his heart. However, if he cannot, he should still follow his heart. So he's basically saying, if ideally, if you're sensitive to your parents, you should think about this for a long, you know, for an extended period of time before you go through with it. So, and this is the opinion of other authorities, other modern day authorities as well, that again, letter of the law, it's your mitzvah to get married, it's your command to get married, it's your love, you can pursue it. Above and beyond, if you want to, you know, not hurt your parents and you don't want to upset them, reconsider, maybe they're right. Ultimately though, if you can't put her out of your heart, can't put her out of your mind, You can go ahead with it. Now, obviously, she should, if she's someone that is religiously totally incompatible, so then that's a separate discussion because then now that's on the son. Meaning, the parents can, again, it's the boy's choice. But he has his own responsibility if it's going to lead to things that would be unacceptable for him. So then he needs to think about that on his own. Besides for if you listen to the parents, if not, right? That it's not like he can marry whoever he wants and then not have any personal responsibility. It's just saying, here we're just talking about how much does he have to listen to the parents? So I don't want to make it sound that a boy can elope with, you know, anyone, and that's okay according to the halacha. The halacha is just dealing with this, you know, does he have to listen to the parents or not? But regardless, he still has to, you know, the girl has to be on some standard, is what I'm trying to say. Yes.
Born in the shtetl in Poland, which was very traditional, and you had to obey your parents through life, not just listen, but obey.
Even when you're 30, 50?
That was it. Nevertheless, if a young couple eloped and came to a rabbi, he would immediately make a chuppah on the fear that if he didn't do it, he might lead them into sinning. And
interesting.
So even though it was so, and you're supposed to obey your parents, but if they came to the rabbi, he would immediately make a chuppah, because if not, maybe they will go ahead and have sex anyway, and he'll have. So it's very interesting.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Right? She brings up a good point. Let's say the kids are not going to listen to the parents. So now, what's the role of the rabbi, someone that could have some effect on them, right, to create a somewhat of a religiously okay marriage and prevent them from eloping and not getting married and having kids out of wedlock and things like that? At least you could say, okay, I know your parents don't approve, but we're gonna go through with this, according to the law. And at least then you won't be together out of wedlock. You can always convince them later to give a divorce, but at least this way you got them before you totally lost them. That's a very good point. That's interesting. Very good. Okay.
I can tell you another thing. In the shtetl, is he saying something?
Yeah.
I can't hear him.
Okay, so let me take his question and then I'll.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said, how does this play out in 2018?
Yes.
I wish I could tell you, if I was, 20 years more seasoned in the rabbinate and I had, a congregation where people would come to me, and I would probably have one or two situations like this. Be that as it may, I don't know, so much how this plays out. As I said, I think 98-99% of the time in our communities, relatively speaking, the kids marry a girl that is approved. Maybe the parents don't think she's perfect for him, and they would have deep in their hearts said, "Oh well, what about that? What about that other girl?" But they're not going to say that because, it's not like. Again, most of the time, boys aren't choosing women that are totally incompatible. I would think maybe. This might occur when a child starts off in less of a religious home and then gets more religious, and perhaps a girl the same. So you have a boy and a girl that have changed from their parents and then want to get married. And then, it's up to the... This is like the opposite case where the parents don't... They feel like their son is choosing someone out of their community, but the other way, on a more religious sense. But I think that in that instance, most of the time, I think the parents understand, because it's not the first decision that the boy is making that's different than where he came from. He's already probably made decisions to change. So this is just the latest one, is that he's going to marry someone that's according to his new standard, not his old standard, but the parents already should have figured that out, that was what's going to happen. More than that, you'll have to ask me in 20 years. Maybe I'll have more insight.
Particularly interested in interracial.
Right.
Yeah.
Please repeat what he said.
Okay, so he's talking about interracial or intermarriage, a Jew and a non-Jew. Again, I don't have that much background to give you. You'd have to ask someone more seasoned in the rabbinate that deals with those things. personally, my community, I'm not sure how much that happens. I know that there are rabbis that are of the opinion that if a person's going to marry someone, and rather than have them totally leave the congregation for good because they'll be shunned for picking someone out of the faith, they embrace everyone to keep them in, and that's one perspective. And perhaps others take a harder line because they feel that intermarriage is not the best thing. So I'll leave it at that, because I don't know the practicals, but I like your questioning. But I think that gets into like the heart of like the rabbinate and these kind of touchy issues.
The rabbinate in 2018.
Which is very different than 1975 or 1955. Yeah. Yeah. Things are different. Yes. Okay, so he's bringing up another point, which is that back in, 1800s, 1900, if you married outside of the faith, so the community would sit shiva for you and mourn for you, or even a person, a single person that left the faith would be ostracized. Again, it depends on the community you're in nowadays. Most people in the Orthodox community will marry someone Orthodox. They're not going to marry someone outside of the faith. So that's sort of what I know. Obviously it could be touchy with parents want their boys to marry nice Jewish girls and they choose otherwise. And so I understand your question that it could be a very sensitive thing because you want to keep the family together, but you want to honor the kids' wishes, and how much can you stop it anyway? So I think there's a lot of factors that go in, but I'm sure there are rabbis that are sitting
dealing with
now as we speak with parents and trying to work it all out. So it's... it's a lot of these conversations are probably, take place behind closed doors, the rabbi's doors, and we don't, where there's a lot of, intense discussion. Again, nowadays, as opposed to, 100, 200 years ago, kids are a little bit more independent, 2018, so... they're not under the community's control as much anymore. We don't live in a shtetl, we live in a place where it's open and you can move where you'd like and live with whom you'd like. So there's a lot less control that we have nowadays because we're not in a Jewish only community. Yeah.
He says 2018.
Uh-huh.
2018 is whether you're a religious home and the parents have authority, or if the parents had to listen to the psychologist who changed our whole society. Instead of children trying to please parents, I know cases where cousin, others, they wouldn't marry a Christian girl they loved because it would hurt their parents. Now it's the parents have to please the children. This is the society. And I actually have found that I'm conservative, observant conservative, but I have found that that's the protection against it. I see old parents treated terribly, and it's because they did this to me. In fact, you know, it's the exact opposite of respect, and you need a balance. I tried in my life, of course, I had two wonderful parents, and obedient, and in my adult life, I always listened to them. I'd make my decision, but I would listen because they loved me and they had lived longer, but I would always listen. But our whole society, see, there isn't the right, in the shtetl wasn't the right balance either.
It was too much to the other side.
It's way to the other, and it's no good, because in the human race, you learn from generations before, not like the animals. And if the children are the authorities and the psychologists, a pediatrician wrote a book, The End of Parenting. He says parents don't have authority anymore. They're trying to please the children.
Don't tell that to me. I have a one-year-old. I'm hoping that I will be able to. That's what I pray for. But yes, you make a great point. That societally, nowadays, it's a lot different. Like, I've been reading some books about, you know, people coming over, you know, in the 1920s, 1930s, and in New York, and how the kids had to work, you know, really hard, and you know, the parents told them go out and work, and they worked, and it was a tight-knit unit. And so fast forward, nowadays, 2018, perhaps it started in the 60s and the 70s, but I think it's a lot more in the millennial age with technology and all those kinds of things. Kids are more independent, and they're also more free thinking from a very early age, and they have access to all kinds of information and ideas and openness. And they're not as obedient to their parents as a society, because it's the air, the feel in the air is independence and freedom and openness. And now kids, parents try to placate the kids, and instead of, you know, having it being expected that the parents,
it's even worse,
right? For you're saying back then in the shtetl, parents had ultimate control, and the kids
all through life
had no freedom, no independence, and that's not good either.
And this is worse.
This is worse. We need to get back to a time when it's in the middle. So not to, you know, say that, you know, our communities are elitist, but I think that, you know, still in the Orthodox, you know, conservative reform, you know, in our Jewish communities, we're still able to, you know, a lot of families are still able to have that to varying degrees, based on the kid's personality and obviously the parents and how tough they were and things like that. I think also what helps is, you know, religion and you know, Shabbat,
which brings
you know, people together, and you know, respect for rabbis. You know, it's not just like a god, like a science. No disrespect to science teachers, but from a religious perspective, a kid sees a rabbi teacher in a slightly more elevated light by our religion. So, but yet it's still, we're affected by the air around us. So. Okay, now just to...
You don't have to worry about your one-year-old.
Not yet, but I'm starting to...
In the Orthodox Judaism, they live in that environment from the time they are born until the time they die.
Ideally, you're correct. I think that in the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic communities, it's more like that. Although, unfortunately, there are cases where it's too overbearing, even nowadays, and kids leave that environment, and that's unfortunate. But you're right. You go a little bit more to the left than the ultra, then you still start to have challenges because of, as I said, technology. So, again, it's every situation's a little bit different. Every community's a little bit different. I agree with you. It's ideally, and in a lot of cases, it is where the kids grow up, you know, showing, you know, more or less, you know, respect to the parents and listening. But it's not always 100% like that, even in the more religious communities. It's, you know, it's
even
still...
Even in the less Jewish communities, the Reform,
yeah.
You find, for example, that people who are not necessarily religious themselves always want their child to marry a Jew.
Yes, yes. Which, as we said before, if the kid does not, that could be tension, because it's not necessarily a religious thing only. It's a Jewish thing. Now, this is... There might be a difference between a boy and a girl in the respect that, you know, if the girl's Jewish, and so let's say the guy's parents are not. Well, let me say this a different way. If the Jewish boy's parents is going to look for a girl that's out of the faith, that's not Jewish, so that might be create more tension than if it's the opposite, where the girl is going to marry someone non-Jewish, in the sense that at least the kids with the Jewish girl will still be Jewish, as opposed to the other way where they won't be. That being said, a lot of parents will still, you know, they don't want their daughters marrying out of the faith either, and even if the kids are technically Jewish, they'll still be raised, you know, half Christian, and they don't want that either. So, as I said, it's mostly the same, but I just wanted to add that little wrinkle in that with the kids, there would be a slight difference.
I have been very welcoming to converts.
Yeah.
I have had in the family where a cousin complains to me, the grandson's marrying a Christian, or she's converting to Judaism. So I say, Helen, why are we against intermarriage? Because that's how minorities disappear.
Mm.
But she's joining us. The threat is over.
Oh, they didn't...
Take her in your arms and welcome
even
her.
Though she was converting,
yes,
because
she
wasn't family...
Judaism.
She wasn't originally Jewish. They didn't...
But
they found that an issue.
Judaism.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Welcome her.
Right, right.
Because the threat
yeah.
is over.
Right, right.
We lost 10...
Well, she's going to become Jewish, so...
And she's going to be better Jewish. On 7 Mile one time, I was shopping at the supermarket.
Yeah.
And I saw a woman from my congregation buying trafe meat. I went across the street.
I got to give Shoshana a hug.
To my kosher.
I just got to give you a hug. I've been listening to you.
Oh, I love her. I went across the street, my kosher butcher. Naturally, I bought the meat less. At last, because you know, it shouldn't be in my shopping, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I bought it last, and I saw a convert I knew from my shul, and she's buying the kosher meat. So some of them, they're better Jews than born Jews.
That's true. That is very true, because they start with listening, because...
And they learn.
Yes, they learn fresh, and now they're not... As, you know, some people get jaded a little bit, for better or for worse. Not for better or for worse. For legitimate or ridiculous reasons, they get jaded. But a convert who joins, they're fresh, they're ready to go. And so I hear what you're saying. Last 2 points. And also an earlier authority had the question, let's say, unfortunately, a parent... is on their deathbed, and they write in their will, I don't want you to marry girl Schwartz, girl Cohn. Don't marry her for this or that reason. But she was a proper Jewish girl. It was just they didn't care for them. They didn't care for the girl. So the question is, she wrote it in a will. She said it at the end. Normally, we listen to the will of person's will to a person that's passing on. We try to listen to their requests, either because you know, this is their last request, or it might upset them if we say we're not going to listen, or whatever it is. So normally we would listen, but what about, so that raises the stakes perhaps a little bit, right? Not only, right, that would be a fascinating question to explore, whether you honor your parents even when they pass on. I mean, we do things to honor them, but in terms of this, so he says that a young couple cannot raise a proper Jewish home if there's not the proper amount of love and interest between them. Settling because of parental pressure will cause anger in the home, perhaps, and result in sin. That's not to say that in the Hasidic and the more right-wing, ultra-Orthodox communities, I was just reading a book, how the kids marry very quickly, young, without having dated for a long time, and so there's not always love at first, but they're okay with that, and sometimes the love comes later. That is like an idea within like the Hasidic communities, that love is not the number one concern in their lives. Are they come from, like, you know, the proper home, and the love comes later. So I'm not disputing that idea, and yet at the same time, in other communities, there needs to be love before marriage, and here there wouldn't be. And so he says that you would be able to go through with the marriage despite the will, because again, this overrides the wishes. Now the last idea is, what about a girl? Would there be any difference if a girl was told, don't marry that guy, he's a bad guy, and she says, no, I love him, I think he's fine. So another authority says that the allowance of the Ramah that we said before would apply even to a girl whose parents disagree. Now, why would you think differently? The answer is as follows. There's another authority that disagrees, that if the groom is not a fitting shidduch, again, that's a gray area, not a fitting shidduch. The parents could think it's not, and the girl and her friends could think it's fine, or, you know, so, or vice versa, that could happen. So it's not always clear. Are these things objective or subjective? Well, it could be both. It could be a mixture. It could be one or the other. So the other authority says that she should listen to her parents, right? Why would there be a difference? Well, perhaps from a strictly technical perspective, men are obligated to, you know, to have children. Women are obviously necessary for that, but they don't have from a very technical perspective, they might not have an independent responsibility to have children. So you, in this case, you would say, well, you know, the girl is not obligated to get married. Men are, women are not, and so that should be a reason to say that she should have to wait and listen. But again, we see that there are those that say that no, a girl's just like a boy. That's the same exact thing. She should marry who she wants to marry. Again, if he's an idol worshiper, then that's her problem, right? It's not saying that she clears the slate, you know, meaning even if she should listen, but I'm saying even if she elopes, so she shouldn't think that, well, you know, I'm fine. No, if you're getting married, you also need to think about what's right for you, and there are certain things that should not happen, that people should not get married. Most of the time, you pick someone that is like you. But in these rare circumstances, so we're saying even with a girl, so there are those that say she can listen to her heart, and there are those that say maybe not. So again, just to sum up, we have this idea of listening to of honoring our parents, of fearing our parents. That's undebatable. unless we can, this could be another discussion, let's say the parents are not so great, didn't do such nice things, do you still have an obligation to honor them? That could be for another class. But most of the time, you have to honor your parents, fear your parents. What about listening and obeying? So that, listening to their advice, following every word of advice, that's a little bit more of a gray area. And so that's what we're talking about here with marriage, with choosing who you want to marry, and parents' decisions. We saw that there are those that say straight out the boy can make his own choice. We saw those that say there's a difference between if the parents are meddling for personal reasons or for religious reasons. We saw an issue about love, about if there's no love, then that's not good either for a Jewish home. We saw that if there's a will at stake, perhaps that might be a difference, but ultimately that could also be, according to those authorities that say you don't need to listen, you can also disregard that. And then we saw there's a slight argument in terms of a girl, whether she can also disobey or not. Ultimately, these things are sensitive family issues, like we've talked about. That's why a rabbi is a good person to talk to, that can talk to the parents and the in-laws and try to smooth things out and work with the kids. And we hope that everyone finds the person right for them in the right time without any disagreements in the family.
But also, this is a class with old people. So what is honoring parents in old age? Now, I have wonderful children. Everyone tells me, my husband, I said, no, it isn't we're wonderful parents. Our children have character. And I see cases, they were just as wonderful parents, and their children are lousy to them in old age. And the revenge is that their children are watching them. They're seeing, our children saw how we took care of our old parents, and that is, so there's a thing also, it's a different honoring at different stages in life. And when parents are old, they need love. They need